With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
And welcome back to another episode of...
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Mostly Lit. Really glad to be back. How are you guys doing?
Doing good this week.
We're back again.
Yeah, back for another week. How's everybody's week's been? Everybody enjoying the sun, the summer? Well, summer.
We just skipped spring. We just went straight to summer.
I saw the Sun report that there's going to be snow.
I don't buy it.
Obviously, but the sun do take the piss.
Yeah, I think they exaggerate.
That is anti-black.
It is anti-black.
I can't get
me all excited here.
Right? And stealing away all our joy.
You know what I mean?
I'm not about it. Anyways, how's your week, Alex?
My week was good. My week was good. Nothing much to report there. It wasn't a great reading week, but we move. We continue.
So you didn't read anything this week?
No, I was just flicking between like poetry and just articles online. Like it wasn't even not many books this week, I gotta say. I've been reading actually, I forgot what the author's called, but it's called Real Artists Don't Starve. And it's actually really interesting talking about creative entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
What that looks like for artists.
Asking for money.
No, I mean asking for money. It's about, because he wrote, if you are a starving artist, you are going to expect money. But like thriving artists create opportunities to do that continually. So he was really interesting about, you know, how you take ideas from other people, influences, and those kind of...
You know what I mean?
Like you take those ideas, you create them and make it into something new, ideas, original, all these different things.
He used
Michelangelo as an example, because Michelangelo, who did the Sistine Chapel, was really, really wealthy off of that. And they were like, where did this idea of the starving artist come from? And you don't have to be a starving artist.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's romanticized.
What do you think of artists like kind of asking for money to support their craft?
Depends on what the craft is. It depends on what the agenda is. Do you see what I mean? If you're just asking for it because that's the only way that you think that you
can
get it.
What if a writer like put out a short story and it was sick, it popped, and then they were like, okay, I'm setting up a GoFundMe, please, so you can fund me so I can write a novel. I want to stop working and I want to write this novel for you guys because I know you'll love it. Please support my artistic endeavor. You're screwing your face up already. Would you be like, okay, fair enough?
I'm not screwing my face up. It wasn't me he was talking about. But a novel is free to write.
It's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do.
Job.
But, you know, James Patterson wrote a page a day while he was working a full-time law career. And doing trials and doing court.
We don't have to read your book. There are so many other books.
You see what I'm saying? Like, he was writing a page a day, and by the time he finished that, and he didn't even leave his job until he had finished his second book. He had to buy copies of his own first book to sell privately.
But just because he did, it doesn't mean that...
That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that there are options out there. It's so easy for you to just be like...
I don't agree. I think if I read a short story from someone, it was sick.
But you don't need to fund them to write the book. They can write the book and then do it.
No,
and
but to be able to write it in during like at a certain period of time, or let's say for example, they're like, I want to write this book within a year. Mm. If I don't have the funds, if I have to work full time, it's going to take me 4 years to write it.
So what's wrong with it being 4 years?
Because I might be like, well, I want to read this. I want to read this soon. So well, you know what? Yeah, let me fund it.
But then, so you would rather rush the process than actually make
it's
it a genuine
rushing.
One.
It's not rushing. How is it rushing?
Because it's also a thing, right? If you've got a project and you've got people funding you around, like behind it.
That's
a lot of pressure as well behind you. The same kind of way that if you were to pitch a book to a publisher, for example, gave you money behind it, you got to finish that
book. Why are you adding this on?
That's what I'm saying.
Guy who's asking for the money doesn't feel pressure. They're just like, I can write this in a year. Mm-hmm. If I don't have the funds and I have to work full time, it'll take me 4 years.
You're romanticizing it.
How am I? I'm literally giving you a scenario.
I don't think. As I was saying, it all depends on the circumstance as to what they are doing. If it's a project that they're doing in collaboration in order for, and the money genuinely helps them to like put it on somewhere. For example, if it's a visual artist and they needed to like rent out a studio space and they needed money for the studio space, you can understand that.
Or say they said,
but when it was, you know what I mean? I don't think.
What if they say, I want to write a classic? Like, think about it like this, yeah. A lot of the classics that we have now were written by people who had the luxury to just write freely. They had people, family, friends, or their own like personal
some were commissioned
as well. But then again, that's still money they're being paid to write,
exactly.
And they don't have to work.
But they didn't have a GoFundMe. They didn't go out and do. They didn't go out and say, "Help me." Do you know what I mean? They had commissions. It
what
was
I'm
just,
trying
a
to say
thing.
Is that they had.
You need to read the book.
They had money.
Read the book,
and they were able to do this.
Read the book, and you'll understand.
I just think I would support it. I'll be about it. I'll be like, yeah, why not?
What are you reading this week?
I might throw a tenner on it or something.
What are you reading this week, Ray?
So this week I started Herman Hesse, Steppenwolf. Mm. I think his writing is perfection. Like,
wow. Ray actually likes a book that I like.
Mm.
Amazing.
You didn't recommend it.
Yes, so you're coming to do this again. Alex,
you actually
did not recommend Steppenwolf.
So no, you didn't recommend. You talked about this book a year ago.
I talk about this book all the time.
No, you actually talked about it a year ago.
If you've been following
you've
the show,
talked about
you
it a
email
year ago.
You and be like, no, it's true that Derek really throws this book out all the time.
Tweet us. Yeah, his writing is like perfect. Like, right. I literally was reading and thinking, I want to write like this.
How far are you?
Like, not so far, just like a few pages. I think.
Is it the bit where the notes? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As in, I'm so flawed. I literally was like, he writes perfectly. There is no fault in his writing.
I really enjoyed Siddhartha.
Did you? I'm going to read it afterwards. Mm. After I finish Steppenwolf. And I really liked Steppenwolf. Normally, I don't like those kind of characters who are like just empty and like they have this dark side. And I'm just like, you're really doing a lot. But I actually like him. He represents a side of man that isn't really talked about in a lot of writing. That dark side that he's just like fully accepted it. I think the way he just controls, I could literally see myself studying this book and writing essays on it all the time. I really enjoy it. And I also picked up Mark McCormack's What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School, because you know I'm trying to be the next Alex Reads.
there's only one, my G.
Well, I could be your understudy for when you're away. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, and I'm really looking forward to this because it has loads of lessons from things like reading people, creating impressions, how to sell, marketability, building a business, getting things done, entrepreneurship. And yeah, it read me to filth. There was a part where it was talking about ego and I was like, rah, like you're really rude. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So those are the two books that I'm reading.
And what are you reading, Derek?
I'm actually not reading anything, to be fair.
Wow.
Right?
Oh my God.
It's been a strange week. I just haven't really...
Wow. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Wow. Head throwback. Wow.
You guys are so silly.
Oh my God.
I haven't picked up anything.
Okay. You know, so.
I wanted to, like... It's annoying. I wanted to pick up Ponty and start reading it, but just didn't have the. I don't know. Just I wasn't really feeling like reading this week.
No, you have that.
It disturbs me actually because when that happens, I always start panicking and think, "Oh, am I gonna lose my ability to read? Like, am I gonna become like just uninterested and indifferent to reading?" Mm. And it makes me panic. So I'd literally have to pick up anything.
Yeah.
Like always have go to books where if I can't read anything else, read those books and then it gets me back into reading again.
Yeah.
So I might have to do that, actually. That's why it's good that I read this short story we're going to be talking about, because that's one of the like short stories or books, whatever, that gets me back into reading.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. All right, let's move on. Oh, bringing back Who's Lit this from now on, guys, which is really cool. I wanted to start off with shouting out Berry from Podcasts in Colour. I just wanted to say, like, just thank you for, like, the nomination, like, retweeting the nomination that we've got for the British Podcast Award. And also, when you look at somebody doing something like this, like, making an archive for Black and People of Colour podcasts, obviously it's in the States, I just thought it would be good to big her up. So that's all you want to put out for Who's Lit this week. Obviously, I choose them, so...
You choose podcast. Them. You're not choosing them all the time.
Why?
Because that's not how this...
Fine, if you want to choose them next week.
I thought it was a group effort.
Obviously, democracy, whatever.
Okay.
I'm joking. But yeah. Democracy's yeah. over. But yeah, no, we chose you this week.
Congratulations on who's been lit. We should have a most lit, a lit song. Like, yeah. You're lit, you're lit.
Or just an applause.
Yay! Oh yeah. My God!
Oh my God.
But, you're lit!
Yeah, that's Berry from Podcast in Colour. She's really been out here for like a while. So... shout out to you. Derek, do you have a gem this week?
I do have a gem. Obviously, like I said, I haven't been reading and it's been difficult for me to kind of think about something. But I remembered, I think we may have discussed this on the show, I'm not sure. One of Plato's myths that I'm sure they probably study in every single
myths.
Philosophy. One of his myths. Oh. I'm sure they study in every single philosophy class. It's the Plato's cave.
Oh, the cave.
Yeah, which is very, very interesting. So I thought, I thought, okay, yeah, why not? Put that on the show. Maybe some people who haven't studied philosophy, or I think they bring up in English literature as well, actually. Mm-hmm. Haven't studied that. Read it. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. The idea is really interesting. And there's just so many ways you can take the myth as well. So many ways, so many things that it illuminates and kind of, yeah, it's just very, very, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, you can take it literally if you want to, in and like in a religious way as well, because there is aspects of Christianity in there. But yeah, Plato's Cave.
Plato's.
You can read it online, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think there's
videos on YouTube.
I think even the School of Life do some videos about explaining the cave.
Oh, is it?
Because some of it's dense or whatever.
Oh, right, okay.
They break it down.
Yeah.
I think that's what I used at one point. Do you know the cave?
Yeah, I read it.
Yeah, you read it? Yeah,
I can't remember where I first saw it, though. I think it's also a little bit embedded into pop culture, Plato's Cave. I think it is.
It is.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember where I came across it.
Videos and films and... so many I've seen a lot of sitcoms that bring it up a lot in like the
really?
Day-to-day jokes. Yeah.
Oh wow, okay. Oh,
that's cool. That's cool.
Anyway, yep, that's my gem today.
That's the gem.
Plato's Cave, written by
Plato.
Apparently
someone called Plato.
Oh, yeah. Someone called Plato. Oh.
Or some people called Plato.
It's part of a dialogue between Socrates and someone, isn't it? But it's part of Plato's Republic. So it's Socrates, but it's really Plato. But it might actually be somebody else, basically.
Why? Everybody should read The Republic.
The Republic's so long, though.
I know, but you just read
it's
it.
It's not that long.
It's actually not that long. It's not War and Peace.
It's like 972 pages.
No, it's not.
No, come on, you're lying.
The Republic.
A whole Republic.
No, I'm joking.
It's like, I think it's like 350.
Yeah, it looks like it. All right, cool. Let's move on to Mostly Lit. So, Derek.
Yo.
What is this book, please?
So, listen, it's not a book. It's a short story.
It's a short story.
It's called Bartleby the Scrivener, written by Herman Melville. It's basically the first short story that he ever wrote, because before he was writing short stories, he was writing like he was writing adventure novels. Then he tried to write like novels with kind of like a philosophical edge, but they didn't really do well. People really wanted to read his swashbuckling stuff and whatever. So he decided to start writing short stories. This was the first one he wrote. It's very good, short, concise, has obviously loads of philosophical edges to it and whatnot. But yeah, I just loved it. The thing is, I came across this. This is another story that's ingrained in pop culture. I first came across this watching a video by Slavoj Žižek, and then he was just like talking about Bartleby and his favorite mantra or whatever, and I was like, okay, this is our title. I just typed in Google, I would prefer not to, and then it came up, and then that's how I read it, and then I was just like, wow, this is really interesting.
Okay,
really, really interesting.
What do you think of the
me?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's the most boring shit in the world.
Oh my
I
God.
I swear to God. So here's the thing. It put the first before Bartleby got introduced. I was falling asleep. I was like...
You didn't think the narrator was funny?
No, and the descriptions of...
Nippers.
Ginger.
Ginger
and turkey. There was a part when, you know, one of them is happy in the afternoon and the other one is happy.
It's like Dickens,
you know,
isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I kind of like that part and I got what you're trying to say. But he, you know what? He writes, obviously, I think this was published in 1863?
Something like that.
Something like that. And I love 19th century lit, right? 19th century lit is my shit. So I got into the flow very quickly because I'm used to reading that type of writing. Mm. So I got what he was trying to say, but I know so many other 19th century writers who wrote better than Melville. Mm. I was reading it, I'm like, come on. And I also thought, so I don't know when we're going to start talking about the philosophical aspects of it, but I thought the philosophical aspects of it were very weak, personally. And I was just like, this is so fucking... Like, it was just like, this is so boring and it's not making me think.
So I had it, and the thing is, I
took it philosophically, so I was like, what lesson am I learning?
Do you know
here?
What? I had it on audiobook, right? Mm. And I think that, like, the narration, I have to say, the narration was funny because there are parts of me when I was just like, all right,
it's
hilarious, but the way it's written is very like, what's the word? What's the, it's very similar. What's that book with the butler? Is it P.G. Woodhouse?
Oh, P.G. Woodhouse. Jeeves.
Yeah. It was a similar rhythm to that.
Reminds me of the Bronte sisters.
Really? Yeah. Weirdly. I felt like it was a similar rhythm to that because I was like, it's just so, you know, like, I meant no mischief, but when he went into look into Bartleby's drawer. And I was like, this is so like.
I love the language.
I feel like you guys really like the 19th century language when they, in the literature.
I like it when it's written like that.
It makes me feel dusty.
What do you mean?
Like, it just, you know, it's just an aged language. Like, it's just aged.
It's not so aged. It's not Shakespeare.
It's not that aged. Yeah. But obviously, it's just like,
You know what?
There's a particular way of getting the understanding for the message, and you don't get it until like halfway through the sentence.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like,
You know, if you
say someone, oh, I meant no mischief, and you're like, all right, fine. I didn't intend to be sneaky to do it.
It's the passive voice.
Yeah, that's it.
But I was like, I was really confused why you liked it, Derek, because you don't like the passive voice. I love the passive voice in writing. And I remember you're more active in what you read. Yeah, so I was very surprised why you liked this.
I don't like the passive voice in novels. Because this is a short... If this was a novel, I wouldn't be able to read it. Mm. Because it's a short story, I can take it. It's only like 50 pages. Mm. I couldn't read 250 pages of that. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes when the passive voice is used humorously...
It's amazing.
It's good, and I feel like Bartleby's funny, and so it works for me. Mm. When
you thought Bartleby was funny?
Not Bartleby himself.
The narrator's
funny.
Yeah.
When it comes to like no offense, when it comes to like Jane Austen.
You haven't read Jane
Austen.
Because
I've tried to read Pride and Prejudice. Because I don't find it funny, her use of the passive voice is just annoying.
It's quite a serious narration.
Yeah, it's just like...
I'm sure there's humorous bits in it because of...
It's all humorous.
I'm sure there is, but the way it's storytelling. It's not funny to me.
The first line is the most humorous that it is.
Is it?
So funny, yeah. The first line is like so iconic and hilarious.
It is iconic, but it's just not funny.
It is funny. It's like narrating what men want and what women want in a very clean and concise way. And it's like, if you're a woman, you look at that and I'm like,
it's so artistic for that century. It's like, it's so lofty and...
Jane Austen.
That opening line.
Oh, the way it's written.
Like, I could just see her sitting at her desk and being like...
No, but that's how they wrote. That's how...
And that's what I mean. That's what I feel like it's just...
Although, I think then you might like the Bronte sisters because they're not fancy at all.
Oh, there is.
It's still quite passive, but it's still... dry and a bit more active.
What do we think about Bartleby then, the character? Because I was like,
waste of a youth.
He's an icon. He's an actual waste man.
I just don't want to. So I think he was asked by the narrator to do something.
You know what? I don't hate Bartleby. I hate the narrator.
Oh, okay. Because the narrator was. It was a typical...
Can we just explain what it actually is? Because nobody actually has said what it is. Derek, you're the one who...
Well, the story. So basically, the narrator is a lawyer. He's not a particularly exciting lawyer because he deals with law. I mean, he deals with like contracts and whatnot. So he has clients like that. And then he has obviously scriveners, people work in his office. And then he hires somebody because he gets a lot more work. Called Bartleby, employs him, sticks him in the corner, puts up a wall. The wall is important. Mm. And then he's facing another wall out his window. And then he's like, basically, I don't know, Ray, if you've ever done this, they probably don't do it now in law anyway, where they like, there's loads of different copies of stuff and they get someone to read one copy and then you go over another copy to make sure it all matches.
Everyone does that.
Oh, they still do it?
We have proofreaders.
I just thought there'd be another way to do it. Okay. Anyway, so he says, oh, Bartleby, come and read this for me. And then Bartleby's like, I would prefer not to.
Mm.
And then he's like, blah, blah, are you moonstruck? Tries to get him to come in again. And he's just like, I would prefer not to. So basically, he cannot get Bartleby to do what he wants him to do. That's his phrase. I think I would prefer not to is on par with Quoth the Raven Nevermore for the most famous phrases in literature, in Western literature, I think. I don't think
Western uppity literature.
Yeah, because it's quite stuffy.
Modern.
Well, I would prefer not to.
I prefer not to. But then there was no, like...
I don't think it's that famous as you think.
Yeah, cause I didn't.
It is.
I didn't think it was famous because I was
even
like,
Junot Diaz has a section in he's reading in This Is How You Lose Her. He's like he says to his girl, "Do you want to do this?" And she says, "I would prefer not to." And he's like, "She Bartleby'd me."
Oh,
do you remember?
Yeah.
See now that makes sense to you exactly.
Yeah, but just discussing Bartleby.
Yeah.
What is it about him that you like? The fact that he doesn't. If he doesn't do something, if he doesn't want to do something, he can just say, "I don't want to do it," and he has no expectations.
Because, Ray, didn't you? I find it interesting the reaction between of the narrator's reaction to
the
him saying no.
Pisses me off.
To him saying he's like, "What?"
Yeah, but
like,
he didn't do anything.
Moonstruck.
You know what? You know what?
Moonstruck? No,
it wasn't that. For me, it was what annoyed me? It was the admiration. He had this weird admiration for somebody who didn't.
Who defied him?
Exactly, and I thought that was very.
It was
really
creepy,
and it's what a lot of people do. These days whereby they find somebody who's like, you know, does their own thing and isn't told, like doesn't owe anybody anything, and then they find this admiration, and I'm just like, what the fuck, like they're just knobheads, like they're not like this is a job that person has to do.
That's
no
too easy.
No, he has something that he needs to do, like you've been employed to do something, like whether, and then you're just gonna be like, I don't want to do it. What are you doing?
Bartleby's a nihilist. For me, that was my reading of it. Bartleby's a nihilist. And it became clear to me when he says that he would stand and look at the brick wall for long periods of time. Do you know what I mean? He was hardly eating. He would just obviously get some ginger nuts from the little boy sometimes and that. And even the fact that when at the end when he goes to prison, he's still just kind of just staring at the wall.
Is that admirable?
It's basically just like, what's the point?
Yeah,
like,
what?
Do you know what I mean? Because obviously at the beginning, Bartleby was doing his work.
Yeah.
And then it just got to a point where he obviously wasn't doing what he was told. And then he just kind of stopped working altogether. He didn't want to move from where he was. He literally started sleeping in the office. And it was literally just kind of like, I can do what I want. And the thing is, what's funny is the narrator, even at some point, he's kind of just like, but what harm is Bartleby doing if he's here anyway?
Mm.
It's kind of like, I mean, do you know what I mean? To me, Bartleby is a complete nihilist. Just the whole, this. What's the point? Can't bothered. I would prefer, like, he doesn't outright say no to anyone. I think that's important as well. He says, I would prefer not to. And then it's like, what do you say then? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do it. That's what, for me, I was like, you're his employer. He needs to do the job. Otherwise, fire him. Why are you not being efficient? What's
that,
wrong
it's
with
that whole
you?
Idea of being passive, aggressive
the
as well.
The passive resistance.
And also the passive aggression too. It was like...
But the thing is,
what?
The narrator even
just
says
say.
That. The narrator even says that if Bartleby had shown some aggression, any sign of being human, then he would have been able to throw him out. But because he was so calm, because he was just so passive, his resistance, he didn't know what to do. Because, do you know what I mean? You have to react to something usually, and there was nothing for him to react to with Bartleby. He was literally saying, I'll prefer not to.
So you think like that could never happen in nowadays though? If someone was to ask you, I'm just thinking when I used to work in the shoe shop, and if the guy asked me to go and get the shoes,
in a commercial
and I said, I prefer
context,
not to.
No, but I, like in a social context, totally happens
prefer,
all the time.
I prefer not to. But then somebody would. But then it's always this game of trying to convince somebody to do something, right?
Or you just find somebody that can do it. I think it's just pointless.
Trying to convince somebody to do something
like
they don't want to do.
Like I don't like being a nihilist is one thing. Working with a nihilist is another thing. Do you know what I mean? Like the man is not doing the job that he's there to do. Why is he still there? To me, I was like, okay, the narrator's just
but the narrator was so intrigued by him, though. It was
that's,
so...
And that's the problem. I'm like,
so
there's like, nothing
like,
to
he,
be intrigued
he
about.
Took, even took to going through his drawer and doing all these different... I was like, it turned him into some kind of...
I felt sad for him, to be honest.
Craziness.
For Bartleby. I was like, I pitied him.
It's like, it's not every
because
day.
Because to just be like, ugh. I'm like... That's a bit
sad.
And
again, it is characterless as well. So that's just like, what is actually going through his mind?
Like, to not stand for anything, to just be like, what's the point? That's very sad to me.
But then he was, I think there was moments where the narrator kind of suggested that Bartleby wasn't human. But then little moments where he would take some food from Ginger Nut, but then give Ginger Nut some food, showed that obviously he had an
compassion.
Idea of fairness. Exactly, so he was human after all, do you know what I mean? But I just think, have you read De Profundis by Oscar Wilde? where he talks about his relationship with Lord Alfred Douglas. And there's a phrase in there where he's like, the tyranny of the weak over the strong. And I feel like that captures that Bartleby's relationship with the narrator, because Bartleby's so weak and he pitied him so much. Bartleby then had kind of control over the narrator, and so therefore he's then seemed like the weak one. And that's how Oscar Wilde talks about his relationship with Lord Alfred Douglas. And that, I think this is why I'm jumping a little bit here. This is why I said that Bartleby's The Scrivener is kind of like a critique of Christian morality, because how far do you take that? I mean, do you know what I mean? How far do you take your kindness and your pity and your love thy neighbor and, you know, helping people when they're in need? How far do you take that?
Is this a question you're asking?
Yeah,
oh, you're asking, asking us how far do we take it?
Yeah, how far as a, how far can you take your Christian compassion?
I don't have Christian compassion.
Well, your religious compassions then.
I mean, I don't.
Do you know what I mean? It's
a difficult thing, because are we looking at it from a perspective of we're in this society where you have to be protective of what you have, and like a lot of the time you're protective of your money, your property, your self. How much compassion, and you got to be very careful of how much you give out, kind of.
But that's what I'm saying. That goes against the Christian doctrine, doesn't it? Because you must care for people. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You can't be too selfish and too self-centered. So that it goes against. So
that's actually really weird. Did you see that hoodie that was tweeted around the other day? And it was like, "Jesus died for your sins, but I wouldn't die for you niggas," or something like that. And that was that was out in China. I was like, I get where they're coming from. It was funny, but I mean, I get where they're coming from, because
what, you would die for people?
Because because I feel like there's this element of saying that Jesus wasn't human.
What do you mean Jesus wasn't human?
In that most humans wouldn't do that.
But this is why we aspire to be him. That's why we try to be Christ-like in everything that we do.
And how many people would give their life in the way that he did? In the way that we were told that he did. Like, none of us can be sure.
Well, there's many martyrs in history, Alex. There's many, many, many martyrs in history. Mm-hmm. Many people who died for their religion. A lot of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's loads. So at the end of the day, I think I'm
always skeptical about how the story was told to us and how we portrayed, how he portrayed the story. Do you see what I mean?
What, the Christ?
Like, not even the Christ, just of the martyrs and of the kind of the context that they give us about it. I think that was there was one story, I can't pinpoint who it was. Was it Catherine or something? But I know that the story wasn't,
what are we talking about,
just martyrs.
No, we're gonna bring it back.
You're gonna bring it back. We're gonna bring it back. But I'm just like, I know that the story wasn't 100% what we're told.
Yeah, but that's like,
this is what I'm saying. So like, but because she's more or less, they could trace her back to be like, well, this isn't what happened. When it comes to, you know, Christ and trying to do the whole, you know, over compassion and trying to do the Christian compassion thing, it's like, what are we trying to do? Are we doing enough just to make us feel comfortable? And because being human is going to be like,
no, but I think when people say we're human, I think yes, we're human, but that doesn't stop us from aspiring to be a certain way. Like the narrator, he's human. He had thoughts of killing Bartleby, and obviously he remembers the famous story on Wall Street where the guy killed his mate or whatever, and then he's like, that sobered him up, and he remembered the words from the Bible and was like, the word saved him from killing Bartleby. Do you get me? So he's human as well, but he's still aspiring to be Christ-like, to be a good Christian. Do you know what I mean? And I'm saying that when we're acting like that, how far do we take it? So at what, because he was even like, I can't call the police on Bartleby either. I can't get him arrested. I can't do this. How far do we take? He even offered to bring Bartleby back to his crib.
Yeah.
Like, you come and live with me.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, and again, that's like the tyranny of the weak over the strong. And then the strong seem like the weak ones. But how far do you take it? At what point do you say, I can't help you anymore? I can't. You need to help yourself.
When you, like, where? At what point do you say no?
I mean, you're probably asking the wrong person.
I know, because she was saying that.
She's going to be like, that's Bartleby's personal problem.
That's your personal problem. You're fired.
No, no. I'm very compassionate. About no tribunal. I'm actually very compassionate. Like, bad bitch me is just a front. I don't know. I'm always trying to help people, honestly. My best friend, shout out Anne. She's always telling me, Ray, stop trying to change and help these N-word.
Okay.
And so I would totes like take Bartleby home because I like he's it's you know what it's not the fact that he's encroaching on my space. It's more what I want to deal with is that nihilism that Derek was talking about, is that emptiness, which I feel is emptiness, because that does not come out of, that isn't a thing that is separated from everything else. It has a cause. And I think if you sit down to talk about that emptiness, that's when things can get more interesting. Mm. Because a lot of the times I think people who are like, oh, you know, like, what's the point? Maybe I'm being a bit intellectually being an intellectual snob, but I don't think they've thought about things properly because other things are affecting them. Like, they think, well, I've looked at everything and I've come to this conclusion that nothing is worth it. But I feel like there is something missing, whether it's a certain type of love, whether it's a certain type of relationship, whether it's belief, whether it's hope, whether it's anything that keeps people alive in their loopy dreams. Do you know what I mean? And I think nihilistic people have this uppity sense of you all believing in these things that are not tangible, but who is to say who is right?
I don't think pure nihilists don't really try and force their opinions on other people.
No, it's not forcing it. It's more so just looking at the two.
But then it's also like they reserve their judgment as well.
I know a lot of people who don't.
From what I've read anyway, and it's strange though, because, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald's got this quote, it says, reserving judgment is a matter of infinite hope, right?
Is it? Is it?
This is what he says, isn't it? So but obviously this is like, you can relate that to the narrator, because he tries his hardest to reserve judgment from Bartleby. He doesn't come to any firm judgment, and that's what keeps him hoping that Bartleby will leave. Or Bartleby will change his mind and actually start.
But I think they have not reserved judgment. They've already given up. They have this emptiness. I don't think they're searching for anything. And I think maybe you will say that, oh, if they have totally given up, then they'll just totally off themselves and die. But I don't think that's the case.
I don't think the final conclusion of nihilism is suicide.
But okay, that's not the final conclusion. But what is then? If you come to the conclusion that nothing is worth it, if you come to the conclusion that this is all like a sham, essentially, in a very, you know, I can't really explain the whole of the nihilistic movement properly, but if you come to that conclusion, what is the consequence?
I prefer not to. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't. I would rather not.
That preference. Who taught you that preference? And where did you get that preference from? And
from
have you been in this?
It's weird because you say that Bartleby was empty, but I think that he just came to the conclusion that the world was empty.
But in turn,
I feel like Bartleby was empty. He just wanted a crib, mate.
Why was he there? Like,
the thing is, he might have started off.
Imagine applying for a job to be like, I prefer not to.
And maybe that wall really, like, maybe that wall, just because that's what he was looking at.
He was looking at the wall. Yeah. A wall was put in front of him, so he was cut off from his boss.
From everything. And I think that was a big thing that illustrated my idea of he didn't have that vision to be able to see anything else because he was so in. Everything was blocked.
But then also work as well. You need to think about, this is what I was going to ask, about how does work kind of engender that indifference in people? That, not nihilism, I won't go that far, but dull work. They say repetition kills you. Do you know what I mean? If you keep doing the same thing over and over again, eventually you're going to become numb. Are you not?
So when one summer, when I was broke, still I'm broke, but still. I worked in a factory once, just like packing glass, like glasses frames. And it was like,
oh guys, Alex has like these new glass frames which really bring out his eyes, and I really love them because I hated his old frames, and now he's looking like this wholesome black man.
Oh, thank you.
It's beautiful. You've got waves. Do you wear a durag to bed?
I always wear a durag to bed, but these are just natural waves. Anyway,
okay.
I was
Derek. Do you wear a durag to bed?
Absolutely not. I don't care about waves.
I realize.
I don't care about waves. And don't forget, I'm bald. I'm balding in the middle.
But it's so bad with your hair being on. Anyway,
go on. Carry on.
Of course, Alex wears a durag, and Derek doesn't. I don't wear wear a head tie because I was never taught to, and I was like, I feel like I'm going against
I was packing glasses for him, and it was for ages. Okay. And it was like, when you're around people that are just constantly doing monotonous jobs all the time, you see them, they do it, they're doing it full time. I'm on agency work. Like, I was thinking, I was bored after an hour, but obviously I was there for 8 hours, and I was like, I think that's where I did want to say I prefer not to do this,
yeah,
or do that. But money talks.
I mean, I don't know if I can.
But then when I look at the people that were there for like 40 hours a week or whatnot,
mate.
They were like proper just, yeah, gonna do this, pack it like that, fold it like this, throw it in the box, did it. They were just doing that over and over again.
Not that with that enthusiasm.
And like, I mean, some of them really? Were really enthusiastic. And
they,
I'm just
they
like,
had to put that
but,
on
I, but you know what I mean? That's nothing to say about what they're doing, because it just wasn't for me. But I'm just like, I can get why he would probably think this is just all pointless, this is all meaningless. You know, I'm actually here just to be paid. Can I just be paid and go?
Especially with the obsession. I think the subtitle to this is, I think it's called A Wall Street Tale or something like
that. Yeah, I didn't understand.
I think it's obviously a critique, I think, of like capitalism and the obsession with more and money and whatnot. And it's interesting that when he tries to offer Bartleby money, Bartleby's just kind of like, I don't want them peas. He's like, when he drops money on the floor, Bartleby returns the money to him. So clearly he's not motivated by money. He's not motivated by food. You know what I mean?
Set him up.
Yeah, exactly. He tries to set him up. So it just becomes clear that he's kind of disillusioned with the world, and he just thinks, I would rather stare at this brick wall in front of me than, you know what I mean, than chat to you, man, than whatever.
You know, work is...
Work. It's not meant
work
to be
is a scam. Yeah,
it is a scam.
Because I when I think about like how I think about Mostly Lit all the time, and I don't get bored. Like in the weekend, every opportunity I speak to somebody, somehow like I will just sneak it in there. So how are you? Well, Mostly Lit, and it's like a passion project, right? Mm. It's something that you love, and you know, I don't know. Like, do people actually like?
Some people love, some people, I mean,
it like a passion project?
Most jobs are, depending on the job, especially if it's, for example, I only know the media. So in that, a lot of them are vocations. For example, if you're a teacher or of some kind of...
Guess what, times when it's like fulfilling.
Yeah, like vocational...
I like
roles.
My job sometimes, yeah.
You're just like, yeah, like, this is what I'm meant to do. There's some people that are really down to be doctors, down to be lawyers, down to be journalists, and you'll see them thrive because that's what they find as their calling. There are some people that are in these spaces and they're like, well, this is okay, but I know I want to be doing this. But
Bartleby has no alternative.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, but we don't know much about Bartleby because all he says is, I prefer not to. But we don't know much about him. It's just a perspective of, I think...
I really thought this was pointless.
Yeah, Melville's highlighting that.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
As in...
But then I guess that's the point as well. It shows you how pointless... life, work. I mean, it all. I mean, I was reading something and they were like, Bartleby's a revolutionary.
You made me waste £8.
They was like, he's a revolutionary. He's the embodiment of like, of resistance. Resistance to social norms, resistance to work.
Resistance to social norms in a way in terms of work, but...
The narrator.
No!
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
No, Bartleby's gonna be running these streets and these corporate roads if man.
But
do you know
wasn't
what I mean?
Trying to. I think he just tried to highlight the absurdity
of it all.
Of it all.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I think he does that very well. I think at the end of the day, when the narrator's kind of like just losing his mind, trying to fight rationally with something that is irrational. Bartleby is irrational. What he stands for, what he does, and then the narrator is really racking his brains. How can I do this? I can do this. I can do that, and just nothing.
Yeah, that
works.
To me was ridiculous. I'm like, yo, like, why are you stressing yourself here? My man isn't.
But this is what people do, though, isn't it? They try to, you know, they try and approach something that is an irrational conclusion through rational means, and it's just never going to work. But yeah, I really thought. I wish I could have explored the Christian elements more, because there's a lot of Christian stuff in the short story.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Loads of quotes from the Bible, references to Cain and Abel.
But then again, it's like the time in which it was written, there would be references to the Christianity, wouldn't there? Because I mean, like,
why?
The time in which it was written, like the 19th century.
It
was all Christian, but I feel like it was more ingrained in the culture than it is now. Do you see what I mean? Especially British culture.
But I think Herman Melville is known to be very careful in what he writes. He's very precise. He knows what he's putting into a story. So I don't think anything slips in there through subconscious. I think if it's there, he's put it there on purpose. Do you know what I mean? This is what I've read of Herman Melville.
I think this is a short story, I think, that lacks, obviously, it's very superficial in that it doesn't go deep in people's characters. I think maybe that's why I didn't really enjoy
it. Yeah, it was basically he touched lightly on Bartleby.
Yeah, so that
it
you
was just
know,
the narrator from.
And then you don't really know much about the narrator. You don't know much about the other like clerks.
The three characters. They're just there for decoration.
Yeah, and I think that's what it lacked. Yeah, and that's why I'm like, it didn't pull me, because there wasn't a lot of characterization. It was essentially trying to look at the absurdity of the world through Bartleby and his complete disregard for anything normal that you have to do. And like,
but you say it's normal. You say it's normal to wake up and go to work and do the same thing over and over again. I don't think that's normal.
Well, that's what the world thinks is normal.
If it was normal, there wouldn't be such high rates of people committing suicide because of work-related stress.
Yes, but normal as in not right. Normal as in that is what the society in which we live in are doing. And if he says no to that, then he's going against the grain.
And he has a point then. He's right in a way. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if he's right. I just think he's had enough.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right, because he could have done other things, or he could have tried to. We could have found an alternative, because he's not representing what is right. He's represented just saying no to that regime. Mm-hmm. I think
it's interesting though as well. Like if we look at Bartleby, like passive resistance, you could then say that resistance essentially is beaten down to the point where it just shrivels and dies, and then there's nothing left. Because this is what happens to him. He ends up in prison, and then he's obviously tucked up in a ball, and then he just dies hungry because he refuses to eat as well. Do you know what I mean? So you could look at it like that. He has passive resistance, but that just never.
You'd never thought that he had any mental illnesses.
People say he had depression, but that's too easy, isn't it?
I mean, he could have.
Yeah, he could have.
I think that there was something there, because to refuse to eat, even that's.
Some people have said that he was an anorexic.
He did, he had like a bit of cheese somewhere.
How far do you think we should kind of push and resist when it comes to conventional and social norms?
Convention. You know.
All the way.
Okay.
Don't you think?
No.
I think so.
All the way, like how?
I resist everything by impulse.
That is ridiculous.
And then I think about it and decide.
Or maybe think about it beforehand.
Why would I accept something straight away? Of course I should resist it first, then think about it.
Or you can pause.
Yeah.
But pausing is resistance, because I'm stopping it.
No, it's not.
No.
Then you would have said, I pause first.
Yeah. Resistance is saying no.
Then resist. You say you resist.
But you do.
Then think about it.
Because everything is oncoming. So therefore, for me to even say pause, that is resistance.
Nah.
Bartleby saying I would prefer not to is resistance. It's passive resistance. He's not pushing back. He's stopping. He's pausing. That's what I'm saying. Mm. And you there's still resistance.
I know it's resistance. I'm saying
with regards to like decision making and stuff.
It's the method. Like, it's the method
how
in which you go
people,
to.
You can literally just stop. Yeah. And just think, and you stopping, because it's not like somebody is coming to you straight away to be like yes or no. Do you know what I mean? You're not saying, you if like resisting will be like no.
Mm-hmm.
Pausing will be like oh wait a minute, let me think about it. It's really that simple.
No, resistance isn't saying no. Yeah. Always. No.
It is.
No, I mean, not always. I mean,
that's pushing.
It's pushing back. So
no, wait, I mean,
the way I would have seen it was that I would have tend to pause and look at things and be like, okay.
Personally for me, I feel like with social norms and straying from the grain,
I want to go this direction.
I think it's very important for the world to develop, for there to be resistance in every aspect, because that is the only way in which society and the world can evolve. We are always faced with a social idea all the time, and there will always be groups of people who will always resist. And I feel to have that is absolutely important, because therefore you're always questioning how your world is moving forward. You're always questioning the world that you live in. You're always questioning people and the regime that you're living under. And it's actually imperative to have it. However, I do think that from that resistance comes a conclusion, right? And when that conclusion is thought about and solidified, if then you're like, I'm just going to disagree, but then we've already had this disagreement, we've talked through it, and we've come to this conclusion, which we think is great. That conclusion may change over a period of time, but to be constantly like and not thinking, that's my issue. I don't like people who resist who are not thinking. They just resist for the sake of resisting,
yeah,
which
is,
I think is invalid.
But what I'm saying,
what I'm saying is
that you stop, you pause, you resist, and then you think, and then come to a conclusion. And also, I know you say that it's good to have people who are always, you know, resisting or challenging the status quo.
Huh?
It's only, but that's essentially what. Yeah. I'm saying it's only people who are under the boot who do that. It's when society benefits everybody, when things are going well and nobody is kind of like troubled.
We've never had that.
But what I'm saying is that who's never troubled. But in the world that we're living in, us in this, you know, we're quite comfortable compared to other places. Yeah.
So there are things that you're not.
If you have to challenge even things that benefit you, that's what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
Even if you're comfortable, you still have to think, a lot of the things that we believe and that have like are in our lives, we've literally accepted passively. We haven't even realized. So in order for me to understand my own position, yes, there are some things I have to pause, and there are some things I have to kind of reject because I haven't had the opportunity to think about them. Yeah. I've just had to accept
them. But you are thinking about
but
them.
But you don't need to reject them.
Of course I do.
No, you can literally just think. Like, it's not I must reject it and then I have to think about it. It really doesn't work that way.
It doesn't
work that way. Nobody's coming to you to be like, do you believe in this thing?
Not
and you're
like,
going to be like no, I don't, when you haven't even thought about it. So
I'm
come
talking
on.
About ideas. Like, just the way, look, Descartes said, in order for you to really have a good understanding of where you are in the world and reality, you have to throw out all of the apples, because if there's one bad apple, it will affect the rest.
Mm-hmm.
That's resistance. Throwing out all the apples is resistance, and then thinking and then accepting one by one. I think that's the way to do it. I honestly think that's the way to do it. And this is why people...
Put a sieve, fam, okay? You don't need to throw out everything and be like... I think what we're doing is getting involved and getting mixed up with the mechanics of how you accept and throw away knowledge, okay? I don't have to be like, I don't agree with this, guys. And then think about it. Oh, and now I do agree with it.
But that's how.
No. That's how you can look at it. Fine.
You know,
but with me, I'll be like, let me think about it.
If something came to me and I didn't agree with it, that was a bit funny to me. I'd be like,
let me think about it.
That's a bit odd. But obviously, if you don't feel like it's good, and if it's obvious to you and your body, or to me and my mind, or whatever, I'm be like, no, that's a threat or something, a natural human reaction.
Yeah, you get that. Certain things. Yeah.
But then, if you're looking at, for example, you know, there's been this big discussion about capitalism and about all these different other, you know, hierarchies or whatnot.
Mm.
People are thinking about these things, looking at these structures, and then saying, right, I reject that structure. Why do I reject that structure? Because X, Y, and Z.
Yes, but
that's what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is that
thinking, you don't just come out of nowhere and reject everything and then be like,
of course, but you must, because that means you're actually living. You're living your life in accordance to something you've passively accepted.
But I just feel like that's a process.
In order for you to properly think about it, you need to reject it. Otherwise, because you've accepted it,
I think
it's
rejection.
Going to influence your thinking.
Rejection is saying, saying I don't agree. That's not what I think. Like, for me, it shouldn't be I don't agree, because you don't know, you haven't made up your mind, you haven't thought about it. What I'm saying is think about it, not but saying I don't agree.
You're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say I automatically say I don't agree,
but that's what you're saying. You're rejecting it.
But that's not me saying that. That's me saying to stop. I don't really want to.
So we're talking about the same thing.
Or if something.
Yeah, now we're talking about the same thing.
Or I'm saying if something.
Yeah.
If I've accepted something passively and I haven't realized, and then I rethink, then now I think about it and be like, okay, I need to reject this.
Now we're on the same page. Yeah,
but this is what I've been saying in the beginning.
You've been saying to say no. I don't agree with this, but I'm like, but you haven't even thought about it.
But we come. We
listen
can't.
Back, I didn't say that.
But no. Rejection, that's what rejection means. Rejection is to just say no.
You said you
no
reject everything
it.
And then
yeah,
you
that's,
no, like, but that's why
the whole apples thing.
But I've been saying I don't believe that rejection means pushing something away. It means you can stop it from coming
so
anywhere
you're
near
pausing
you.
Or
if you've passively
it.
Accepted it, you can then reject it. The okay. two things are different, and that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So but anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we... Okay, I was actually talking about work though. Like when you get to, like, because that's kind of how that's kind of yeah, where I yeah, was going yeah. with it, because of Bartleby. But like, it's like how when you're in a position like that, that's actually affecting your everyday life. Because you know, if you mess up your job, you mess up your money. If you mess up your money, you mess up your lifestyle, and so on and so on and so forth. And so much comes about it. Like how would we end up going about changing those kind of structures or changing like what that how we work in these kind of particular
money
places?
Monetarily because working is a very hard I think to do it, but I think more on an ideological level. So ideologically, say for example something simple like religion, I think it's very important that everybody who either is brought up and born in a religion to at some point in their lives stop and think, okay, do I actually believe in this? Let me research, let me question, and then come to a conclusion that fits them. I think that's very important, because it's so many people will say, oh, I'm Christian, I'm Muslim, I'm this by name or by culture, by the way that they've been brought up. And I think it's wrong. I think you need to really research and know what it is that you're putting your belief system on so that you can come out on the other side and be like, you know what? Yes, I am Muslim. Yes, I am Christian. Or you know what? No. Or you know what? I don't know. Or because I've looked it around and it's not for me. I think it's very important. Same with ideas. And like, honest to God, before uni, I wasn't a feminist. I used to think that people who discuss a lot of women things were just like annoying, because I'm like, oh my God. And that was only because I was in like school, all the topics would be like, all right, let's do a gender question. I was like, why? Honestly, it was only until I studied that I'm like, yo, like this is, do you know what I mean? And I question, and now it's like part of every structure in which I view the world. Yeah. And I think, so ideologically, what you believe is very vital for you to question and for you to understand.
And that varies from person to person.
It varies from person to person. But I think in this age, you have no excuse to not to, because like phones are, internet cafes are 50p an hour. They still
do
that.
Everybody doesn't have to agree, you know? And I think that's just one of them things. People don't have to agree with you.
What, agree in not being ignorant?
To you.
I think we're kind of mistaking information for actually understanding and knowledge. Like you know, people are like, oh, Google's free. Just because you Google something and you read the information.
No, it's like analysing that information and seeing whether you
have the critical understanding.
People don't do that.
But people do it.
When people say Google's free, they're not saying go and do a critical analysis.
They say Google's free.
They say
so that
go and
you
read
can,
the information.
So you can read the information and so you can come back and agree with me.
Exactly.
who are you people friendly?
But people, I don't say this, but this is what people do.
That's trash.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, you know what I mean? You can go read up. Anyway, let's move on. Mostly flicks. So, okay.
Oh,
two
mostly
ways,
flicks.
Two,
yeah.
Two things here.
I didn't watch
now,
that damn film.
Midnight
you
special.
You didn't watch the movie.
Midnight special.
It was yesterday. You said.
It's an hour and a half.
Midnight special. It's on Netflix, guys. Go check it out.
But we were gonna do the MCU.
But we could do towards the end, because obviously it's next week. It's this week.
What's that? Yeah.
Anyway.
Infinity War comes out this week, basically.
Yeah, this week, Thursday. So yeah. Guys, get your tickets and go. But
guys,
briefly, quickly before the Midnight Special, yeah.
I don't know why you didn't like it.
I didn't like the film. I thought that it was they were no believable characters.
Is it sci-fi?
Yeah, sci-fi. Yeah. And then when I saw Cameron,
Cameron Diaz,
Kirsten Dunst again.
No, like, that witch. No, I'm not watching it.
I was like, Kirsten Dunst, you're here
you
again.
Guys are ridiculous.
I just didn't really
Midnight Special is one of the best.
Don't embarrass yourself.
Midnight Special is about some alien kid.
He's not an alien.
I don't know. We'll explain the story.
You're really going to say the one of the best. You're really going to say
Midnight Special is one of the best sci-fi movies I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's top 10 because people agree, but...
Back to the Future?
I don't really like Back to the Future
either. I don't understand
what?
The hype of that stupid...
I don't really like Back to the Future. But Midnight Special
is just... I love
that
trilogy, guys.
It's amazing. Like,
it's upset me.
I think The Boy is like... I personally think The Boy is kind of like a Christ... It's like a Christ... He's like a Christ-like...
What is with you and Christianity in today's episode?
Well, I don't know. It's just, but that's what it is anyway. That's what I think. And he's not an alien because he lives on Earth. He just lives on a different plane of existence. Do you know what I mean?
It's a bit mad.
So this little boy, a cult has him and he can kind of...
Oh, you don't ruin it, please, because I...
Okay, I'm not going to ruin it. But anyway, yeah, I do believe the child is Christ-like. The end is amazing. You didn't like the acting. I thought Michael Shannon was amazing in that movie.
I just didn't like it. I mean, it was intense. It was intense. You know, it had all of that suspense. I was just very much like...
Can we stop watching space films?
But I'm not a huge sci-fi buff. Do you see what I mean?
No, I don't think you need
sci-fi
to be.
Becomes quite cumbersome.
What?
To me, when I watch
what
it.
What sci-fi have you watched?
Right, thank you, Ray.
Give me a list of...
Okay, what? Have you watched Interstellar?
Interstellar
is cumbersome.
Wait, have you watched Interstellar?
We did watch it for the show.
Did you actually watch it?
Yeah, I did watch it, and I find it cumbersome.
It is cumbersome, but it's still...
I tried my best, and I was like...
But it was a bloody amazing
piece
of work.
It's a good film.
But what do you mean cumbersome?
I just found it was a lot.
It's a lot.
I find that sci-fi is really intense.
I think
intense.
What really lets Interstellar down is the dialogue. The dialogue is absolutely whack. Mm. Like, it's really silly sometimes. And there's too much explaining.
Yeah, but there needed to be explaining because, you know, dumbasses go and watch these films and they don't know.
But you can do it better than the way they did it. Their explanation...
What, you want it to be like some next Star Wars?
not even, they just have... Just don't make it so obvious that you're explaining things to me because I quite like
that stuff.
No, I hate that.
We went to watch. You couldn't make it, Ray, but we went to watch Rampage on Thursday.
Who?
Rampage.
Oh, the 4DX.
The 4DX at Cineworld because you couldn't make it.
I actually could have. Then I realized it was too late.
The 4DX is sick.
The 4DX is great.
Is this the chair that moves?
Yeah, like doing
it's
all this
more
stuff.
Than just a chair that moves.
No, my friend went to watch it. It was so annoying because she wanted to concentrate and it's just moving.
But you're proper with everything.
Fam,
we watched the Infinity War trailer in the 4DX. Fam, it was so fucking sick.
Yeah,
I'm definitely watching the Infinity War in 4DX.
Yeah, yeah.
It is fucking sick, man. Seriously. Rampage, on the other hand,
the film with Dwayne Johnson and Naomi Harris. Is it Naomi Harris?
I think so. Yeah.
And,
That's Naomi Harris.
Naomi Harris.
She's English, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. British.
British. And she's just like, the film wasn't great.
It was it's like a B movie. Have you ever seen like Sharknado or Piranhas or something ridiculous like that? But it's a Hollywood B movie, so the special effects are good. But it's so ridiculous.
I quite like corny shit like that sometimes on a nice Sunday morning.
I think you'd probably like it because it's about, you know, Dwayne Johnson. He's got this friend, the gorilla, the albino gorilla.
I've seen the advert. Film.
Yeah, yeah,
you know he's silly because you know when he's like, of course the wolf flies. It's like, even I was like, yes.
I think they know that it was a silly film. Yeah. They're just getting their paper.
But it's very big money. Like there's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a blockbuster. Yeah.
Blockbuster film. But I mean, again, another sci-fi film that was just like...
That's not
Rampage
sci-fi.
Was it not?
No, it's just...
It's
not sci-fi.
It is because what makes the animals grow is science fiction, basically.
You know, with me, it's so weird. I always think if I'm not in space, it's not sci-fi. Literally.
Would you say any of the MCU is sci-fi? I would say that's sci-fi and fantasy.
Some of it is science, sci-fi.
It is sci-fi.
Sci-fi, fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It's superhero.
It's superhero.
That's how I put it. I put it in superhero. Oh.
But then you have to think about the way in which they acquire their powers is science fiction based. Because, you know, everything about Tony Stark is science fiction. Well, most of the things about him actually is science fiction.
Mm.
Jarvis is now, we call our Jarvis Alexa. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So, yeah, eventually houses will have like their Alexa. I think there are some houses in America that are completely controlled by Alexa.
I really want it. Actually, do I?
Everything's connected. So when one thing shuts down, everything shut down.
Yeah, and then if they want to do that to your system and burglars, you're gone. I want to have a panic room.
Why?
Because I know I'm going to make it in this life and people are going to be coming for my neck.
Oh yeah, speaking of Marvel, I just watched Doctor Strange.
Yay!
And I love Doctor Strange.
Did you?
I think it's
of course you did.
I think he's one of my favorites.
That is so you. Of course you would like Doctor Strange.
It was just everything that I needed.
You know, there's a film. I need to rewatch it because I fell asleep. I never told anyone this. What? I fell asleep at the end of Doctor Strange. So I actually don't know what happened in the end.
Really?
Yeah.
Sick. I love Doctor Strange. One of my favourite. I think Winter Soldier is the best Marvel movie.
I liked Winter Soldier.
I prefer Civil War.
I liked Winter Soldier just because of the story.
Yeah, it's good. It's a standalone movie.
Yeah.
Because I actually like the first, like the first
Avenger.
First
was
Avenger
like,
was.
I like that. As well.
I thought
you needed.
Pants.
You need. Okay, I'm not.
I liked all of the Captain America movies.
Really, for me, Captain America was like one of my least favorites until Winter Soldier was okay, but for me, I loved Civil War. Like I remember walking out of Civil War like tingling, like how I watched Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight Rises for me, not MCU. Sorry, like Divergent. Like when I walked out, I was like, holy shit.
Really?
Yeah, I love.
I think Dark Knight's better than.
Really, I prefer Dark because I don't really like the Joker.
But Dark Knight is just the. I think that movie is incredible.
I don't like the Joker.
Dark Knight Rises is the Joker one,
love
isn't it?
Bane. No,
that's Bane. Dark Knight.
Dark Knight Rises.
Sorry, Dark Knight
Bane.
Is with the Joker. Yeah.
But MCU, what are you guys excited to see? Avengers.
I've heard that Captain Marvel is in Infinity War.
Shut up.
Because I watched the interview with the Russo brothers and they were like, yeah, you know, we've got this person in it, we've got Captain Marvel.
What?
And then I was like, what? Said it like, but when he said it, one of the Russo brothers looked over like, am I allowed to say that? Like, he looked over like, is that cool that I've said that Captain Marvel's in?
But it's too late
now.
That's not cool.
But even when
we don't know. Why did you do that, Derek?
When you go on Rotten Tomatoes and it tells you the cast, Brie Larson is there. And she plays Captain Marvel.
She's coming. So I mean, they have to introduce her somehow.
They will. Yeah, they have
probably
to.
Probably be a short.
And she's the strongest person in the
universe.
Of all the Avengers, she's
the
strongest.
The Avengers.
Really?
She's stronger than Thor. I think she's stronger than Thor.
I mean, I don't really.
Yeah, Captain Marvel's really strong.
Okay, so I'm trying to think.
I really don't like Brie Larson.
Yeah,
I don't know who she is.
You don't like?
I don't know who she is.
You don't like Brie Larson? I always find it funny that she's named after cheese. It's interesting.
What, Brie?
Brie. I love Brie.
I always found that strange.
I love Brie.
But, okay, so.
Yeah, what are you looking forward to?
So
I've
only just kind of like.
How many have you?
I just want to know more about the Infinity Stones and just trying to figure it out.
Can I break it down for you?
You can, but I have kind of got my idea.
I'm not going to spoil it, but obviously. They told us in that 20 minute section.
They did explain it. But I'm just like, okay, so the Infinity Stones, I'm trying to get my head around it. So I'm trying to work my way backwards from that point. So I've seen most of them. I've only seen one Thor. I've seen all the Captain Americas. I've seen all the Avengers.
Guardians of the Galaxy
Guardians
1.
Guardians of the Galaxy
Why?
1.
Trash.
I like that. It's just lighthearted. It's just the more lighthearted ones out of all of them, but it's necessary, right?
You should watch 2 as well. It's good.
Yeah, because it's necessary to have. You need to know where that Infinity Stone is.
Yeah, you need to know, but it's more so like.
There's no Infinity Stone in 2.
Not in 2, but in 1. It's in 1. It's in nowhere.
Thing is, what I don't like is obviously, I'm not really a comic person. Mm-hmm. So when I first started with the first, like, the first couple of films, the Infinity Stones weren't something that I was looking out for. It was something at the back of my head. So I had to, like, going back, I'm like, oh. Because it's not something that they highlighted properly. It didn't really say, this is something that you should be really focusing on.
Infinity Stone is in Captain America, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which one?
No.
The first Avenger.
Which stone?
No, it's...
The Tesseract is in
Tesseract.
Infinity Stone.
Tesseract.
There's one inside it because in the clip you see him crunching. But I can't wait.
But guys, let us know what you think when you guys get around to watching it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see Shuri again because that little clip that Shuri. I saw, I was
And keep in mind, we're only going to be withholding spoilers for 2 weeks, fam.
2 weeks? Is that it?
Oh, come on, man.
As in, it's too long. I want to talk about it.
We can't talk about it next episode.
We can.
No, that's literally had 4 days.
We'll tell you spoilers.
Spoilers. Like, don't listen until afterwards when you know. It's like the read. It's like if you haven't watched the Beyonce performance, then don't listen to the read.
That's different though. And the Russo brothers even posted something on Twitter. They was like, guys, once you've watched it, please don't spoil it for anybody else.
Yeah, because it's going to be something that...
Because there's something mad that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess don't spoil the main thing. But yeah, I'm such a bad person. I always spoil.
We'll talk about it.
Loki's
going
to die.
We'll see.
I think Loki's gonna die.
We'll see.
Tom can you just like? Can I don't like these like predictions because now I'm gonna walk in. I'm like, oh my god, Loki's gonna die. Do you know what I mean? And I'm just like, oh shit.
Yeah, but I don't
my
know.
Friends will do this. Like my friends will be like, yeah, and I'm just like, okay, yeah, they're gonna. Okay. Now in my head, everyone's gonna
Who
die.
Who do you predict's gonna die?
Cap. Mm-hmm. Oh, Vision.
Mm-hmm.
Cap, Vision. I've heard about Loki, but I think not.
I feel like Vision will die.
Yeah, I feel like Vision's
I think he's too much of a...
He was No, he's amazing, though. He's actually incredible.
I don't think Vision's going to die. I think Shuri's going to get the Infinity Stone out of his head, and then he's going to be safe. But then, obviously, Thanos is going to get the Infinity Stone. Don't forget that
Vision's got the Mind Stone, right?
Body is made out of vibranium.
Vision's got the Mind Stone, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got the Mind Stone.
I think Vision... Out of the stone, that is my fave.
Yeah. The Mind Stone?
Yeah.
I like the Power Stone.
Do you?
I think
I didn't understand the Power Stone because it was like... Yeah.
I love that and the Time Stone.
Okay. Yeah, I like the Time Stone.
Yeah.
Because I love time. Anything to do with time, I'm like... Ah! Yeah,
so I think Loki's going to die and I don't think Cap's going to die. I don't think Stark's going to die.
Oh, wait, no. Stark
is not going
to die. Wait, is he contracted for the next film?
Yes, he is.
Okay, yeah.
And so is Steve Rogers.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, they're all contracted for the next movie.
Hmm.
I mean...
Thor's not going to die, but Thor's going to get a new hammer called Stormbreaker.
Shout out Disney for the secrecy.
And, Stormbreaker? Everyone knows about Stormbreaker already. They know he's going to get a new
hammer. Not everyone.
People know.
No. Mate, people who just like...
Hardcore fans.
There's even a toy of Thor and he's got the new hammer in his hand.
No, people don't know.
Well, okay. Well, he gets a new hammer called
Stormbreaker.
You've
actually just spoiled it for some people.
Whatever.
We have to put a spoiler on this because that is a spoiler.
And, okay. I also think Gamora's going to die.
Yeah, Gamora's dead.
Not Gamora.
Gamora's dead. Yeah. I hope she does because she's so annoying.
I think the two like sisters Gamora. Are going to sacrifice themselves.
Oh, you think?
What, for the world?
Thanos. Yeah, because they want to kill Thanos.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I think they'll sacrifice themselves.
Someone.
All right, let's...
I really like... They really should have kept Thanos consistent throughout the films.
What do you mean?
They just the way they showed him was not consistent at all. Well, except for that little thing here.
But sometimes he's in space and the lighting's gonna be different.
Nah, come on, no. How come all the superheroes are looking the same in space, but it's Thanos that needs to be morphing? No. No, that's really annoyed me. And also, we know in the clip where he comes out, in other like parts, like sometimes like the after shots of like after credits, he looks bigger. The way they shoot him, he looks much bigger.
Yeah.
When he came out in the time wall thing,
yeah,
he was looking like one anorexic thug. I was like, come on man, like you've been looking like a hunched up.
But don't forget,
Ray's concerned about Thanos is eating
don't help. Forget these are not finished clips, so in the trailers they're still working on the movie when they release the trailers.
I know,
so
but still Thanos is looking like some weakling.
Anyway,
I really hope that he gets all the stones and then he just like destroys.
He will. There's a clip with him with like four stones in his thing.
We'll see.
I really, I don't know how they're gonna.
Because we don't even know where the soldier is.
Also, like, Spider-Man is a little bit... the clip that we saw was just...
Remember the clip we irritated. Saw and how he gets the...
Yeah, that was dope.
Anyway, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
All right, Ray, what's your issue this week?
All right, my issue today, guys. Well, let's talk about our resident mixting on Instagram, on the pop world, who's dating the prince.
He's on the BBC as well.
Yeah, he's dating the prince of crime. Who's dating our prince?
Okay.
Listen, Stormzy. Okay, let's break it down. Maya Jama has been somebody or whoever it is has gone through past tweets of Maya Jama's Twitter, where it has been shown that there have been a lot of sort of derogatory comments against black women. There's horrible tweets, her laughing on matters of colorism, dark skinned women,
rape,
disability,
fat,
she was savage,
fat shaming
in 2012,
and this was her in 2012, and I believe her, she was, what was it, 18? Yeah, she was 18 years old,
somewhere from 2013.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
over the 2 years.
some people, there's been quite a mixture of responses. Some people are saying, well, you know what, she was young, and you know what, at the time these things were acceptable, especially with regards to cussing and colorism, like cussing black girls, it was a thing and it was okay. And some people are saying, oh, you know, who would have the audacity to, you know, who would have the time and the energy to go past, to look at past tweets and bring them up? That's so bad intentions.
People have been doing this for years,
right? But my only thing is, and I said this on the TL, it doesn't matter to me when you use the excuse of it was normal at the time. It's ridiculous, because you know at that time what you are doing is not right. Even, I don't care how normalized it was, you're only laughing because you know other people will laugh with you. That's it.
Yeah.
One
of them kiki girls, isn't it?
Exactly. And I like, and you kind of, you just know the type of woman that she is.
I just found
the
so
young
crazy.
Lady that she was, you know, like, because they've been about. But it's just a shame. Well, I don't know if it's a shame, but it's just come to light. Yeah. So
I don't
think this is a drag, because I it's really annoying me, because I really like Maya Jama. Like I follow her on Instagram and I watch her stories. Like, I think she's funny and like just really nice. And seeing
she
this,
she thought she was
just,
funny too.
Right? She thought she was really funny. And seeing this is just like, rah. So yeah, what do you guys think?
I don't know, man. Like, there's an element of bad intention that's gone in there. But then also, you know, I'm not saying
we
that.
We don't give other people that same, you know, when other things come up with other artists, do we say, oh, whoever has looked at these things,
even when it's a Stormzy stuff, I was like, well, people are looking at thing. Even Steph London, when she was doing that, I was like, but she was still chatting wreck all up until the point. So it was like, people knew this of her.
What did she do?
When she was saying, oh, about dark skinned women, and you guys are all working 9 to 5, aren't you guys tired of being broke and all this stuff? I just, like, you know, my why would you do girl. That? You know what I mean? It's essentially, I'm paraphrasing that last bit, but yeah. You know what I'm saying? She kind of did all of that. And she went, did she go back pretty much unscathed? Maybe?
Who's
I don't know.
London?
Steph London?
But she came back to lie and said, oh, those are not my tweets. And then they were her tweets.
Yeah.
And then she had to apologize. Yeah. Her apology was weak.
But then you know what I mean? It's just
obviously, it's a shame when you like the people and people are like, oh, you know, like,
I was still listening to 16 shots.
They should all be getting the same types of treatment.
Yeah.
It's different when you like somebody. Like, say, for example.
But that's what people just need to admit. Just admit the standards are different, because you like Stormzy and you like Maya Jama.
Yeah.
Just tell the truth.
Yeah.
And you don't like Steph London.
But it's shit. But that's the shitty part of it.
But you're never going to treat anybody equally. You're never going to give anybody that kind of, like.
It's like when your mate gets dragged on the TL and you know they're wrong. You're not going to say nothing on the TL. But if you're somebody else, you'll be harping your mouth. And I've seen that done so many times.
Yeah. Like, it is one of those things. I'm not sure, you know. When you get to a stage, when you get to a certain level, you have to delete your tweets. You have to clear out your social media. You either start a new one or you delete your tweets.
I need to go and delete. I'm so sorry, short men of London. I am so sorry. This is a public apology for all the short men in London that I have told are closer to hell.
She's not sorry.
You are a beautiful black man. And you are entitled to come in my DMs. Well, I will shoot you down, but you are still entitled.
Was it only short? You know? Was it any short black men that you were talking to?
I mean, I only love black men. So,
oh, okay. Cool.
You know,
you apologize to all the Nigerians that you've insulted.
I am so sorry to all my Nigerian, my fellow Africans, my fellow neighbors of Wakanda for any insult that I have sent your way. Because truly we are one, and I'm sorry. What was it that Maya said? I'm sorry to dark skinned women, but also all women.
All women. She came to be all lives matter.
Someone tweeted, oh, Maya Jama gave out her initial apology. The TL took it back, marked it, and gave it back. And then she posted the correction.
Oh, and that one, someone said, where are the full stops?
Oh my God.
Wow.
Like, the things she said, like, were disgusting. Like,
it's horrible.
They were horrible.
One of her tweets really made me feel a bit sick.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them I was like, oh my God, this is like a young person tweeting this. Some of them I was like, this is vile. Yeah. Then I saw the dark skin one, I was like, nah.
But then at the same time, I'm just kind of like, yes, of course, people should be held accountable for what they've said. Of course, like, I've tweeted some mad stuff as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't always like a feminist, or I wasn't always, I guess, not woke, but like, I wasn't ideas. Always.
Like, you don't mature.
Yes, I wasn't always self-conscious or introspective. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't the person I am now. But it's like when you can't see the person's gradual development.
Yeah.
You can't see that with Maya Jama. So people are just assuming,
like, there's that and then the gap.
They're assuming, yeah, there's a gap. She must be the same,
yeah,
as she was before.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And I think, and it's difficult. Do you know what I mean? I mean, this is with cancelling culture. One, there needs to be consistency, but it never will, because like you said, they
exactly.
like, if you like
exactly.
someone, you don't want to drag them like that.
But it's just, like if Beyonce was to kill somebody, I'll be like, well, you know what? Self-defense.
But I mean, Beyonce, look, at the end of the day, the whole sweatshop thing, Beyonce should have been cancelled after that.
Yeah.
The whole sweatshop thing, do you know what I mean? But yeah. She wasn't, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
That's life, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people are always going to pick and support their face.
Yeah, and to be honest, you should be able to, like, there are some things cancel, but I don't, like, you have to draw the line for yourself.
Mm.
You have to sit down and think, what can you hack and what can't you hack? Do you know what I mean? Certain things you can stand some person doing and still consume their art. Some things you just can't. So there shouldn't be a line, a bar, a sort of a consensus across the board.
Mm.
It should just be you. Like, what can you hack your fave doing that you can still ride for them and still allowing them to take accountability for their actions? So if you think from reading all of this stuff that Maya Jama posted a few years ago that you can hack this and you can still support her work now, I guess do it, right? But if you can't, then at the same time, do it.
Yeah.
So you just have to... But take accountability and give us a proper apology with, you know, full stops and not on Word. In the beginning, it was on Twitter. And
it was on Twitter with the minus thing and then you screenshot it and put it out. What kind of laziness?
And then it was on Word.
Word.
Yeah, just do like a nice white backdrop.
You have a PR team, get them to go on Photoshop, write up the thing.
I love that Stormzy just deactivated. He was like, I'm not finna deal with this today.
Like, peace. You know that gif of the guy when he's like, deuces, and he disappears.
And it's a shame that obviously someone was like, you're dating somebody who's very dark skinned and this is what
you're
doing.
You're talking about his mom, imagine. Right, guys.
Cool.
Thank you to everybody. British Podcast Awards, please vote.
Please go and vote.
Messy-lit.com. The voting is there for the Listener's Choice Award.
Go on the news.
News. We are at MFest.
Yes.
Next
week.
This week. This week, this Sunday.
Yeah, this Sunday.
When
we
this
will
airs,
be
the 28th.
At
9th even, the 29th.
Please go and buy tickets because we'd really like to see a good few friendly faces, that we've seen before.
That's all on the website.
Do we tell them what book we're discussing?
No.
We can tweet that out a bit
later
on.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Let's hit them with a surprise.
Yeah, hit them with that. What else is there? What else are we told to say?
That's that. If you know, follow us on
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Mostly Lit, Instagram, and Mostly Lit Pod. Send us your emails, your thoughts. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
Definitely.
Please leave us some comments, give
us
emails, because we'll actually read them out.
Yeah.
And I'll read them out.
You need to leave us more comments on iTunes. Currently, the last comment we had was, you know, Derek is the Beyonce of the group. And I know that rattles Ray every time she goes to check if there's any new comments. So guys, you know, please just...
I don't go and check because I don't care.
We do need comments on SoundCloud as well. So guys, come on. Comment on SoundCloud so we can start discussions and get it going from there. All right.
And make sure. Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say something shady.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, we don't do that. We don't do that. We don't do that. We are grown.
We look at
our ops. We are Beyonce. Mm. We're not, you know, we give people platforms.
There we go.
All right, let's go.
Okay.
Bye, guys. See you. Catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.